Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions during this broadcast, you can feel free to send me an email at bonkay@aol.com, that's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, @aol.com, and I'll be happy to address it for you. So just a couple of fast announcements. My new newsletter will be coming out in May. I have revived it after being away for a year, so if you haven't written in yet that you want to be on the list, please send me a note at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll put you on the list for my new quarterly newsletter. And without any further ado, I'm going to introduce a man who I'm just in total awe of. I've had the pleasure of being able to actually meet him in person twice in California. And Mike, welcome to our show. Welcome back to our show. It's wonderful to have
you. Thank you, Bonnie.
Here.
It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you again.
You're one of my highest always rated shows that women want to hear about. And I guess the people they're married to want to hear about it too, so they'll know how to stop it. But that's all right. Mike is a private investigator in Orange County, and he does work all over the country and the world, and he's been in business for a long time. I've had, like I said, the opportunity to have the pleasure of meeting him a couple times, came to our healing weekends to try to encourage women, to give them ideas on how they can be better prepared for moving ahead after they get the news about their husbands being gay, or if they haven't gotten the news, how to maybe check on it better. Because, you know, it's a world where things are very complicated today, that there's all kinds of technology that, I don't know, for some reason, Mike, we're behind the times for the women on, we can't keep up with these guys and keeping them at bay, finding out what they're doing. And I know that you're an excellent excellent private investigator, but I do have to say to you that I have a whole slew of private investigators that are part of my support network because we're always investigating our husbands. So we've learned some things, some tricks there.
So many of my clients would make great investigators. They're very good.
Exactly. It becomes like a career opportunity after you're married in this situation. But I think that some of the things that come up when we talk about this that you can address is I always tell women the first thing is that if you have an idea, if you're coming to me and writing me a letter about your husband and you're not sure if he's gay or not, that already is something, saying something right there and then. Because wouldn't you say that most women who don't have gay husbands wouldn't think that they're gay, that they'd be cheating with other women, happening or experienced?
Yeah, I mean, usually people are pretty surprised when they find out. It's in the minority for sure that when we just have a regular surveillance for someone that may be having an affair, and then we discover it's an affair with someone of the same sex. That oftentimes is not expected. Sometimes it is. But when we have clients that are pretty sure that it's same sex, it's almost like our regular cases in the sense that we're just confirming that they're right about it.
And have women come to you before who didn't think it was a man? They thought it was another woman, only to find out it is a man.
Yes. That's what I was just saying, that sometimes when we're hired just to do a regular surveillance to see whether there's infidelity, they're shocked to learn that it was a man. Yeah, so that does happen. And I have to tell you, though, that sometimes people think that their spouse is gay, but we find out they're having an affair with a woman. It doesn't mean that they're not doing more than that, but when we've caught them, it's not always with another man. So all of the above can happen. I always, whenever you're considering anything in this world, I think that you have to think out of the box and not assume something is what you initially thought it was. Just be open-minded and assume that anything you might, when you're turning over these stones and trying to get to the bottom of something, anything's possible. You might really be surprised by what you find out, or you might just be confirming things that you already knew.
And I think that's what's so important, because so many women labor for years and wonder, you know, is he cheating on me? You know, and they swear they're not. You confront them. Would you suggest, because this is what I tell women, I want to know if you agree with it or not. You know, I tell a woman when she's suspicious, don't confront your husband, because as soon as you confront them, that's like a red flag to them that they have to start hiding what they're doing. Would you agree with that or no?
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree with that. I have to tell at least two or three people a week not to do that. Stop doing that. Don't have that toxicity in the room every time where somebody's pointing fingers and getting in screaming matches or arguing or accusing or needling and asking all these detailed questions. It's such a waste of time, and all you're doing is educating your mate that you're on it, that you're paying attention, that you're looking, and especially when they tell them that they've hired a private investigator or they threaten that they're going to hire a private investigator, all those things are not good things to do. You need to just find out what's going on and have a plan. And your investigator, if they're experienced, can really be useful. And it doesn't cost anything extra to talk on the phone for hours, if necessary, on different occasions and go over a plan and an exit strategy even, and the right kind of an attorney to use, or whether you need an attorney or whether you even need to hire a private investigator. You know, I spend a lot of my time talking people out of hiring our services. You know, I tell them, if you hire us, we'll do a good job for you. But from everything you've told me, you really don't need me. You need an attorney.
Uh-huh.
So, but I understand, you know, the need for finality and proof. That's very important. But what you do with it, how you use it, and what you say and how you behave, you know, a lot of times I have to tell my clients this is important sometimes. When they get the bad news from me and they cannot keep it together in the house because they know the truth now and it's awful, how are they going to keep up appearances? How are they supposed to keep it cool and not let on that they know the truth? Because they're going to break down crying on and off, and they're going to be miserable. I usually tell them, think of another reason why you would be upset. If you got some bad news from a friend, or if you're upset about something else. And so be prepared for that. Have a backstory. So when it's obvious that you're very upset about something, quickly defer to that other reason instead of searching for a reason or just saying, I don't want to talk about it. And defer it to that, and that'll bring it right back to where it was. These people are so narcissistic, they're thinking about themselves anyway. So once you give them a believable reason for your being upset, they're fine with that. Uh-huh. They'll move on. They are not that worried about you being upset, and they'll go back in their own little planet, their world, and do their thing. So it's important when you find that information out that you don't lose any kind of an advantage that you might have in this situation, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. And you plan and you talk with your attorney, and you never threaten that you're going to get an attorney, or that you've met with an attorney, or that you're going to get a divorce, or that you're never going to see the kids again. These are things that cheaters say, and they're things that people that are unprepared and scared say. And you have to be measured and smart, and a good PI can, they've been down that road a million times. You don't have to be really smart, but if it's what you do for your life and your livelihood, you kind of get it down pretty good, and you know what works and what fails. And so we'd like to have everybody do the best they can. That's not to say that you're trying to hurt the other party. You're just trying to make sure that you do everything right and that you're protected. And when you have a gift of information, you don't just throw that away and squalor it and let the other person get one up on you again.
I think the whole thing is that you have to look at this like a battle, which means that you need a strategy, because you want to win the war. You don't want to be left behind. You don't want to make stupid mistakes that you're going to pay for later. And I know that's so difficult when you're going through such an emotional upheaval. And, you know, I tell my women, this is a place, you know, we have a safe place where you can sit and tell any story you want, where you can sit and cry with other women who are going through this. But you really, for this particular battle, have to prepare yourself to win it. And winning it means you have to have that element of surprise. You have to be well prepared with any kind of documentation you can get ahead of time. And even things that, you know, we've talked about on the show before, but, you know, for new listeners who are listening in, one thing that really impressed me that you do is, I think you call it like a forensic kind of investigation, looking into somebody's, you know, hidden monies. Am I terming it correctly?
Sure. So we have a couple of different things that we can do, and there, and it's nothing that we are exclusive at. Other people can do these things, but we do a national bank account search and securities and investment search. So in some situations where it's a pots and pans marriage, for lack of a better term, and the client knows there's no potential assets out there, then that's not something that they need to concern themselves with. When you've got someone who's very cunning and there's extended properties and assets and there's a lot of secrecy, now we're talking, there might be a really good reason to see whether there's bank accounts that you're not aware of, and any investment securities accounts that you weren't aware of, and what the balances are in those accounts and what the institution is. So you know that. And then later on, when your attorney asks the questions in deposition or in court about that, if they lie about it, you've already got the truth. So that's not going to go well for them. In some states, when they lie about it, you get the money that's in the accounts they weren't disclosing. So so that's one part of it, just bank accounts. It includes checking and savings accounts and also the securities and investment accounts. Then our background check, it includes so many things that are not important to some clients. Some of the things are very important to some clients, but what is valuable pertaining to assets is it'll list any property, tax assessor's information. When it lists property and property ownership, historical property ownership and current property ownership, it also shows us how it's vested. So if it's vested as husband and wife and with whom, or if it's been recently changed and you're off the title and you don't even know it. A lot of people assume they're on title. They don't know that they were removed and they got a notary public to notarize some documents that they shouldn't have notarized, and it's phony, and you're not even on the title to the house anymore, the deed. So there's a lot of games that can happen. So a background check can show the status of property and whether there's any property. And like that, it can show businesses, if they own any businesses, LLCs or sole proprietor or S corporations, that is listed there. And it will show the corporate officers' names. That could be their significant other could be listed as a corporate officer. So all those things are tangible assets that are important in some situations and not as important in others. And then, of course, when you do that background check, there's criminal records, other civil records, derogatory civil records, bankruptcies, evictions, notices of default, judgments. You know, it's all any civil filing that occurs as a result of any derogatory record should be included in a good national background check. And that's good for you to know. Good for you to know the status of somebody.
Exactly. And I think a lot of our women are very naive when it comes to this because, you know, either they don't have any control over the bank account, you know, their husbands keep tight control, or they, you know, take all the expenses so that you don't see what they're doing. And so you're really at a loss. You know, you just don't know where your household money is going until you do something, an investigation like this. Does it take a long time, Mike?
No, the background asset search that we do is done in-house. It takes me no longer than 2 days to complete it. I usually tell people a day to a day and a half. And I'll give you a for your listeners, as long as they mention that they heard it on your show, so I know that it's legitimate. I'll give them a big discount on that. I'll talk about that in a second. But
okay.
So that background check takes me about a day and a half to get the information back to them, a full report with everything in it that I can get, and that particular type of database search, which is an awesome search. There are some things that it won't include, and I can also send anybody that wants it, if they send me an email, I will send them my information sheet on that so they can see what it includes and what it does not include. So they're pretty clear on it, which is important so there's no misunderstanding. So that takes that amount of time. The normal price on that is $375, which is pretty reasonable considering the information that you get. I'll take $100 off of that for anybody that says they heard us on this show, on your show, and that'll be good
great.
For a couple of months. So I'll be happy to do that.
That'll be great.
So the other search, the bank account search, the national bank search that does checking, savings, and the securities and investment search, those are two separate searches. Those searches take an average of 10 business days to complete. Those searches I outsource to a vendor that I've used for decades. Those are more expensive. Those are $1,200 a search. Again, those are well worth the money when it's a case that warrants it. And you've those kind of searches are whatever the market will bear. I know investigators that use the same vendor that I use that charge many times what I charge. And then I know investigators that don't even know how to get these things done. So it's all over the board. You kind of get what you pay for. So those are two important things when you're looking for assets. And like I say, the background check includes criminal records. You might be surprised what you see in a criminal portion of our background check. Not only does it have the asset thing that I went over, and some of the civil records like bankruptcies and things, but criminal records, everywhere from citations to health and safety code violations to felonies. I mean, it's all in there. So it's a great quick go-to resource where you don't have to go all over and think about where to look and go online and use these online services that when I've looked on those, they still say that I'm married. I've not been married yet, and they say that I'm married, so it tells you how good their information is. There is no good database search for that, by the way, to see if somebody's married. So anyway, it's just a good tool. You go to one place, you pay a fee, you're getting it through a licensed investigative agency. And it's done. You've turned over that stone. It might have some information that you need to pursue and follow up on, and it may give you some peace of mind that there's some things that aren't there. So it's a good it's good to avail yourself of those tools if the situation warrants it.
Mike, on your website, you advertise that if you have surveillance, this can be helpful in a custody case. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Usually when we're referring to the value in regards to custody, it's to establish behaviors that are not okay, or to get evidence of behaviors that have already been ordered by the court that the individual is not supposed to engage in. So say they've got a drinking problem, and that comes out in the course of the divorce and the custody issues, and they've got, you know, either criminal records or no criminal records for that. But they're a big drinker, and they don't care what anybody says, and they're going to do their own thing, and they drink all the time. They drink when they're with the kids. They drink when they're at restaurants. They drink in excess, and they hop in the car and drive the kids. It's not to mention drugs, obviously. Drugs are much harder to catch people doing drugs, but they still will fail a drug test. So when these issues come up in court, and the court orders that the person is not supposed to have anything to drink 24 hours before they get custody, during custody or visitation, or any time during, and our client knows that the person is thumbing their nose at the court, and they don't care what the court says, they're not going to listen to the court, and they're out drinking and doing all this behavior when they have the kids and up until the time they get the kids. And so they hire us to go do surveillance and document through our seeing it and writing it down in our court-ready report that we provide for everything we do. Or on video, if we see them in a restaurant or in a bar and we're able to obtain video footage of that, which we do in probably 90% of those scenarios, all that's included in our surveillance. So they give that to their attorney. I don't ever recommend doing these cases in pro per by yourself. That's not the way to do it. But if you must, then so be it. But you give that to them. And when the court sees that this person is violating the judge's own order, the judge isn't going to take kindly to that. And they're usually going to adjust the custody down to visitation and more limited visitation. And then you wait a couple of months and we do it again. And we see they're still doing it. So then they go back to the court and they show the court the reports again. And they continue to chip away at their visitation because they're not someone that you want to have around the kids under those conditions. If they clean themselves up and they're back to being a productive citizen who pays attention to what's going on, and you want them in the kids' lives, you know, that's all good as long as they're doing the right thing. But when we're called to do what we do, it's usually because that's not the case. They're in bad shape, and they don't care what anybody says. So those are how you do it. And just screaming about it in court, telling the judge, telling your attorney, that's all hearsay. You can't use that. Everybody's eyes roll up in their head. You have to have evidence and proof for everything that you're claiming. Or you don't want to waste the court's time. They have to have evidence and proof, or it's not even worth mentioning. So to get to the point of a court ordering that, you've got to have some evidence of it too. So sometimes, even before there's a court order, you do some surveillance to show that this is the case, and then you bring those concerns to the court, you show them the report of the investigator. We're able to testify if we need to testify. We've testified many times in courts and in hearings to these things with great success, and that's how you play that game. And, you know, there's some other things that we can go into that are some kind of do's and don'ts when it comes to how you behave in these situations.
Yeah, that would be good. Could you
save
do that?
I can do it. Sure, I can do it right now. So when you when you're dealing with the other side in one of these situations, you should never argue with them about it. You should never throw these things in their face. You don't needle them with it. You don't keep pushing their buttons. I mean, we've had people that we've worked with or that we've that have used our services that ended up getting killed by their spouse because they kept pushing and pushing and pushing, or they unwisely threatened to expose the secrets to their family or to the church or to their friends or to contact their significant other or their family or friends. And people can't take that. You get to a breaking point and you can't take it. So they just think if they kill you, you deserve it and that'll stop. That's what they think. I mean, they're unstable. And so you've got to be very careful. And I'm not saying that you need to be paranoid or scared. You know, a lot of people tell me that they're afraid to do X, Y, and Z. They don't want to tell on somebody for something or call the police, whatever the scenario is, because they're afraid of the repercussions. Well, you know, that bright sunlight is a great disinfectant. And if you are smart about it and you don't make the big waves, you know, to them, to their face, and you lawyer up and you do everything in a more of a not a secretive fashion when it's out. So when you, people that are doing wrong can keep it secret, that's how they get their power. When they're exposed, they lose some of that power. Threatening to expose them is dangerous for you. So you don't threaten. You just do it. And, of course, the way that you do it, you've got to, you know, you don't want to necessarily go overboard to hurt someone. That's not okay. But to protect yourself, to prove what it is that you need to prove, to get that evidence, you get it, you share it with the right person, your attorney. If you're working with a PI, then they can be really helpful with that. You should not share it with your friends and family and play that game where you're wearing your heart on your shoulder and talking to everybody. Quite frankly, that hurts your reputation. It doesn't serve anything positive in your situation. Just have to do what you have to do and take care of all of this in a measured way, in a smart way. And if you feel lost, you'd be amazed at how helpful a call to someone like me, after we spend 30 minutes or an hour on the phone at no charge, we can talk about all this. And I think it's, from what I've been told and the feedback that I get, it's very empowering and it makes you feel very confident and a lot better, and it gives you some direction. And, you know, I'm not an attorney and I don't play one on TV, but I've been around the block with family law lots of times. And I've seen a lot of these things thousands of times, not hundreds of times. I've been doing it for almost 40 years now. And so you get to see a lot of the same things repeat themselves. So you get to see what works and what does not work. So I think it's really important the way that you handle these situations. And not doing anything just makes it worse. Or starting it and then canceling because they come back crying and they want you to, all the promises. Right. And then 6 months later, it's 20 times worse, but now it's on their terms and everything that you had in a form of an advantage is gone. And if you still want to be friends and you don't want it to be like the end of the world afterward because you have feelings for this person, that's all possible later on. But you still have to do what's right and what's smart for you and for the kids if there are kids involved. It's, you know, this argument that we're staying together for the kids, maybe, you know, twice out of 100 instances is that an accurate statement. It's almost never the case. Kids see how adults around them act, and that there's no love and that things are wrong and it's not healthy, and staying together and keeping them in an environment just because you're afraid of losing some security is not the answer.
I was having that conversation with somebody this evening, one of our members, and, you know, I said that when these things happen, number one, no, it's not fair. Number two, you're not usually not going to end up a winner. You know, you're going to have to sacrifice stuff. You may have to move out of your house. You may have to sell your house. These are things that we don't have control over because there are laws that control that more than we can. But the fact remains that to stay in a situation that's toxic to your system and poisoning you and your family, you know, when my ex-husband and I split up, I was, you know, 32 years old. I only had a high school equivalency diploma. You know, I didn't have any marketable skills. I had two little babies, one who was very ill and in and out of hospitals, and there was just no way I could work. I came out of a very abusive marriage, and so I was mentally beaten down. And I went on public assistance for 3 years, during which time I worked my ass off to get through college and then do my master's program so that I would never have to be back on those welfare rolls again. And in those days, you didn't get a nice, you know, ET card in the mail. I mean, you had to stand online to get your money. Sometimes 3 and 4 hours on those lines with little babies pulling at you and screaming. And it was a nightmare. But you know what? As bad as it was better than living in a situation where I was constantly, you know, like under warfare and always feeling bad about every day waking up, never thinking I'm ever going to have a good day again. That I say you can always live on less, but you peace of mind you can't buy. You know, it's something that you need in order to thrive. And I agree so much with what you say, Mike, about the children. You know, I always say it's better to come from a broken home than to live in a broken home. Because when you're living in a broken home, you start modeling your own life. You know, it's always monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you. syndrome, as I like to call it, where whatever you see, that's going to be your fate when you grow up and you're an adult. And I tell women, if you allow your... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you look for people, like they say a lot of times, like I married my mom, or I became like my dad. You know, we hear people say that a lot. It would be so much better if your mom was a strong mother and kicked this person to the curb and raised the kids. And that's the lesson that the kids learn, that you don't with something that's like that. And you know, as they grow up, they'll see more and more of the personalities come out from both parents. And they'll gravitate one way or the other, but they'll see and they'll learn. You don't have to explain it to them now. They're kids. It's your problem, and you need to insulate them from that, but you need to protect them from that. And they will learn and really respect. Some of the best families that I've ever known that went through these things were so proud of their parent for doing the right thing at that time. It's very difficult to do that, but it's not as difficult as people are afraid. I mean, it doesn't take that long for you to feel a lot better. It's just when you're in that mire, when you're in it, it feels like you're stuck in the mud and there's no other way out. And sometimes just talking to someone and getting a plan, which is why you're so valuable. You help people through this so much, and there's not enough people like you. But when you can see that there's a way out and it doesn't have to be ugly, and you can take the high road and protect yourself and do it right and have the cleanest exit as possible and not hang on to that toxicity, let it go. You know, I see people bounce back quickly. It's amazing.
Mike, what do you do in a case where, you know, you're sharing custody because the courts say you have to share custody and the children are really being, you know, mentally abused by their spouse and they never want to go with him and they're always crying when they have to go? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, you can request that the court appoint like a 7:30 evaluation or some professionals that can interview the kids and the parents, and they make recommendations to the court. Unfortunately, that's not a perfect science. And some of those people don't do a great job, but it's there, and a lot of times it helps. And a lot of times the person that's not good around the kids is exposed, and so those recommendations to the court are made by the evaluator. But, you know, a lot of people that have to go through these are, it's like when they're in counseling, the ones that ever went to counseling, they can lie through their teeth and they're great con artists and people believe them. They've got a great personality. They're good at the BS and they can get away with it. Not always the case though. And when the kids are interviewed by the evaluator, you know, a lot of that will come out. The problem is, in some situations, both parents have to agree to do that unless the court orders it. So if you've got one parent that doesn't agree to a lot of these things, then you've got a problem. So you have to navigate in whatever the rules are in the county that you live in, because it's not a national law. Every state is different. You know, that's what you have to do. And I strongly support that, because there's not a lot. It's awful. I have clients that are mad at me and expressing all that anger, and they're so upset and frustrated because they're afraid to let their child go over to that house, and they can't believe after what they've seen and what they've even shown the court that they're still allowing it. And it's just perplexing. And I've seen that time and time again. And I think that's a failure of our system. I think that's a big failure. And all you can do is do the best you can. And, you know, you can't refuse to let the other side have custody, because now you're the bad guy and you'll lose custody and it'll make you look bad. And you've got to be careful that you're not the one that self-medicates to deal with this, because that'll be used against you, or something bad could happen as a result of that. So when there's issues like that, I think you can have an evaluator talk to everybody involved and give their professional recommendation to the court.
Do you think that you know, I tell women also that when you finally do catch something with your husband and that he's cheating on you, you know, and then he'll make you this great confession, well, I don't know how this happened. It was just a one-time thing. It was a moment of weakness. I don't know what I was thinking. I was drunk. I mean, is that enough of a pass for them to say, okay, let's try again? I say
well,
these guys
I think
lie.
I think with your area of expertise and with the people that you're working with, I don't buy that.
Right.
I think if it's heterosexual, I have a big problem with it, but I think it's a little bit more to work with there. I mean, how do you work with someone whose sexuality is what's in question, not their
infidelity?
Just,
right. I always say
yeah, not just infidelity. I mean, you're dealing with multiple issues. So, I don't even compute that in my mind. So I can't imagine how I would ever be in that situation. Anyway, no, in any circumstance, accidental, drunken or not, or I mean, it doesn't compute. So I don't know, but I don't buy it. I don't think that you're going to catch me with another man and it was just a slip up. That doesn't compute.
Yeah, that would be quite a slip up, but I just don't feel that. I feel that when a guy gets to the point where he's already doing it, whether it's curiosity, I just don't feel like straight men are curious in that way. Like, that's just not something normally they would want to try. And, you know, everybody says, well, you know, sexuality today, it's so fluid and nothing stays the same. And some people are on a scale of 1 to 7 and some people are more this way and that way. And, you know, I tell people you can call yourself whatever you want, asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, dissexual, you know, metrosexual. If it's not heterosexual, it's just not straight. I say call
right.
it unstraight, you know, but don't make up excuses and reasons.
I question why women will marry or even stay with a guy who plays in that whole realm. I mean, if they think for a second that it's a healthy situation for them to be in, I don't understand that. And too many people have this, you know, this attitude that anything's okay, everything is okay, and it's all okay, but it's not.
Yeah,
I mean,
I guess it depends
on what you're shopping for.
Yeah, I don't have any of my women who feel that way, but I think what it is that, you know, it's such a shock to your system because we grow up learning that gay means you're attracted to somebody of the same sex. So if somebody was attracted to us, married us, had sex with us, had children with us, and, you know, some of my women really didn't have much previous experience or anything to compare it to. You know, maybe they had one or two fleeting sexual, you know, times, but they really don't know. And a lot of times men who are gay, they're very confused too. You know, I don't give them a free pass, but I definitely give them a pass. I think they're very confused also because they're socialized to see what a gay person looks like with a lot of types of movie figures that we look at or the guys who are like feminine and swishy. And they say, well, that's not me. You know, I don't act like that. So maybe I do have these attractions, but I guess all guys have some and you just don't act on them. And a lot of them, I really do believe, are confused. But once you start acting on it, you're not confused anymore. You know what you're doing. And I know they're fighting it because they don't want to be gay either. You know, I always say you can trick yourself. You can't trick Mother Nature. You know, you can't be who you're not. Gay is not a choice. Gay is who you are, and you have to learn to accept it, embrace it, and then do the right thing, which is tell the truth about it. So,
right.
But I think for women, we're so confused, and women don't want to break up a family if they don't have to. You know, they love these husbands in many cases. I mean, not all of them are very abusive. But some of them are doing the best they can. They're living with their best friend. You know, we have marriages all across the spectrum of from abusive to people who love their husbands. And the ones that love their husbands think they have the best marriage. Okay, maybe they don't have sex, but they've been married 20, 25 years, and their friends don't have much sex either. But now they feel like that's not what marriage has to be about. It's my best friend. So when the news comes out that, you know, your husband possibly might be, and then they always usually start out with bisexual. They like to break it to you that way. I'm having these bisexual feelings. You know, I know bisexual means you want to be with a man. doesn't mean you want to be with your wife because you're not making love to her. You want to be with a man, which doesn't negate that you love your wife, but you don't love her the way a man would love her, a straight man. You love her like a sister. And that's where the disconnect is. Like, these gay men really think that they're bisexual because they have a wife, but they're just having sex with a guy. And that's why I don't like using labels anymore. I just have, like, Bonnie Tae scale, 1 and 2. Straight, not straight. You can be anything on that not straight spectrum that you want. But women have to understand that if you're not straight, that means that your husband's going to be out there looking for a man. It's that simple. And maybe he's lying to you that he's not doing it, but I think they're all doing it. I really do.
Well, or they're desiring it, and they're not in a committed relationship that's honest and truthful if their head is somewhere else. And, you know, I think it goes on the person getting married, man or woman. You need to have your life in order, and you need to know where you're at and where your head's at and where your sexuality is at before you marry somebody of the opposite sex. I mean, that's on you. And so if you learn at a later date that you were mistaken or wrong, then you need to come clean and make it right. You don't live a lie forever, and all of the ugliness that comes along with that in a relationship that's wrong. You know, you and I have talked about how there's a breaking point and they start acting out, and it can get really ugly in a lot of cases. Not everybody's that way. Everyone's different. But I think that if you're not sure, you shouldn't be getting married. End of story. If you're always not sure, then, I mean, if they already get married, that's a big mistake, in my opinion, right there, if they don't even know. I mean, if I have an eye for men, I have no business marrying a woman and building a family with her when that's not what I'm wired for, because I'm deceiving her.
Right, but I think these guys, when they're young, they don't really realize that. Because some men really don't, you know, their sexual needs don't become really stronger until they're in their late 20s or their 30s. And that's when they seem to all of a sudden, you know, bloom and blossom and grow, their need for a man, and they're not being able to perform with a woman. But even so, that doesn't give you the right to go out and start having boyfriends now and bringing home sexually transmitted diseases to your wife. Because to me, the real big difference here than with other marriages, to be honest, you know, between straight and gay, it's so humiliating for women to be told that they're undesirable, that your husband, the man you love so much, who, you know, you're working to have a partnership with, doesn't want to touch you because you smell, you have bad breath, you're sticky. They come up with like a million different reasons why they don't want to touch you. And it's very humiliating, you know, to have to feel that you have to beg for sex. Nobody wants to have to do that.
Emotional. It's emotionally abusing. I mean, there's people that do that when they're unhappy. They're unhappy in their own space, and they do things like that. And they, you know, that misery loves company. And it's just, it's so beneath people
to behave that way. They don't take the responsibility. You know, they blame it on you. And that's what the issue I have. And the other thing is that when they're out there cheating on you, bringing home sexually transmitted diseases, because about 20% of the women I work with have something. And that scars you for life. You know, women who have herpes, really, you know, they're at a disadvantage having to check every time they're having, you know, women with HIV have a hard time finding a man who's going to understand that. You know, there's so many complexities that are involved with this situation because men were cheating on you and, you know, saying, well, I had to know for sure. Well, find out afterwards. I mean, why are you doing this while you're married? I mean, so I just don't always get it, you know, I guess maybe because I'm not gay. I mean, I do appreciate the fact that, you know, they're in the wrong marriage, you know, got married under the, you know, good circumstances, but it didn't work out. But to go and cheat and to make your wife feel bad about herself, to bring home diseases, you know, and then blame the wife on top of it. Most of the women who get a sexually transmitted disease, their husbands blame them. They don't take any responsibility. Or they'll tell them stupid stuff. Well, you must be cheating on me. Well, you've never cheated on you. Well, you must. You have a sexually transmitted disease. You didn't get it from me. Well, yes, you did.
Right, or they
You
say,
brought it home.
or they lie and say they didn't know they had it, but they had it for decades, and it just came out and resurfaced.
Yeah.
And no matter what,
20
see,
years
the
later.
only thing that these people have to do is have it say enough to you where you doubt yourself. You're not positive. And that's a lot of the reason why they hire us. I mean, the things that are said when they do confront their mate about cheating or having an affair, or the why are you securing your cell phone all the time? Why are you having conversation and texting in the bathroom, or when you go on walks in the morning by yourself? And what's with all the secrecy and on and on and on? Well, they lie to you enough just to keep you off balance. It's a manipulation, and some people are very good at it because they're saving their own butt by doing it. And so the women are kept in this state of limbo where they just aren't sure, and they start to now doubt their own sanity and wonder
exactly
if they're crazy. And it's just so unfair.
In straight life, they call that gaslighting. In my world, I call it gaylighting. You know, making you think that you're crazy for what you're seeing when those porno ads pop up and they say, I didn't put it there, it's pop-up ad. Or when you find, you know, gay magazines in your house, and they're like, oh, my friend asked me to hide it for him. You know, they're so, they all have the same stories. You know, it's just amazing. Let's have this
network.
Yeah,
the lies are what,
tell your lies.
That's a tough, right. It's very difficult. And then what do you do with that? You expect your mate to be honest with you. They're your team.
Uh-huh.
They're on your same team. And so when that person who you love more than anybody else, that you're supposed to be able to trust more than anybody else, they're the bad guy in the room, and they're making you feel like you're the bad person in the room. It's just, it's really weird. I mean, they become like the enemy. And so when you need to get to the bottom of something, and you, the last person you can trust for the truth is that person, that's why you do something like go outside and hire a professional, at least talk to them and find out where you should go, what you should do, and what they think about what your story is. And, you know, you'll get at least their input. You don't even have to do anything. But I think that isolation is so damaging. And when they don't communicate or they don't have a way to talk to anyone who's been experienced, they're so afraid that they're doing something that's violating the trust of their marriage. They feel so guilty for talking to a private investigator.
Absolutely.
I mean, all of that. Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
all hogwash. If I'm lying to you and I've cheated on you, then I deserve it. You need to go, you owe it to yourself to go check me out and see if I'm being honest with you or not.
Exactly.
And then you owe it to yourself to get the heck out of that bad relationship. You know, if we were having these conversations and we were in high school and a high school beau was doing this stuff, you'd be gone. Gone. And so the difference
mm-hmm.
is we're older now. We have a different set of insecurities now. We have other responsibilities and things that tie us together and tie us down now. And those create a lot of convenient insecurities. And I think that we give way too much power to those insecurities. And you need to kind of rein it in and get your act together, get a plan, and do something about it. You can't live like that and make yourself and the other person less happy because they're not being honest with you. I mean, it's so common in straight and gay relationships that the person who's engaging in the behavior that's untoward, that they shouldn't be doing, they're not strong enough to end the relationship. They're so dependent and they've got so much going on that's so scary to them. You've got to take the power, and you've got to do it yourself because they're not going to do it. And unfortunately, in our culture, women see the man as the stronger part of the
mm-hmm.
relationship more than not. And so they expect that a man would do that thing. That's so untrue. I mean, I would not be in business doing what I do if that were true, because the problem is the person that's cheating is lying to you, and they are not strong enough to do it, but they'll sure come across like they're more than strong enough. I mean, that personality and how they can slap you down, figuratively speaking, to keep you where they need you in that off-balance place is exactly how they can continue in that lifestyle. And so it's up to the woman to take that power and do something about it and have a plan and just move forward. and then you'll be better for it. You know, I think that they'll be so much happier out of a situation like that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I just in all fairness to women, I'm having this conversation with the group tonight that I have, that, like, women say, how did we let ourselves get to this point? First of all, these guys are professional liars. You know, they live every day of their life as a lie. Many of them are also narcissists. And I'm just studying now whether the tie-in is with the lying and the narcissism, or it takes a narcissist to do this kind of lie. I'm not sure which comes first, chicken or egg. But the bottom line is many of them are, and they know how to confuse you. They know how to cajole you. They know how to make you feel like you're the most important loved person in the world, and then they know how to slap you down because they know all your weak points. You know, I think they really look for women like us who are kind, compassionate, loving women who, you know, that they have a prototype of a woman that they want to be with because they know if they get caught up in their lies, they don't want the worst to happen. So they feel, at least if we find out, that will be more understanding, that will be more sympathetic, that will be their
right
pal.
I call those the best. Those are the best kind of women. They're the compassionate,
exactly. The best
caring.
Wives.
Those are the
yep.
best kind of people. And
I would say straight
you
wives
know,
are the best wives.
Yeah, and the way that they are find themselves in these positions is trust. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when I marry, I expect to be able to trust my mate to the ends of the earth and back. And so you give that up. You completely trust them, and you move on to the next subject. That's not something that you should ever have to dwell on or second guess. You married them.
Yeah,
they're your spouse.
Talk
they're your mate. That's how you get there. If somebody takes advantage of that, that's not on you. That's on them.
But, Mike, I want to ask you this. Talking about trust, and, you know, you're a straight man, so you can give me an honest answer on this. I think that if somebody's, you know, in a loving relationship or in a relationship of true, you know, sharing and caring, why would you have to have secret passwords for your computer?
That's a tough question.
Like,
I mean, I don't, but, and my phone isn't locked. I mean, even
mm-hmm.
in the business that I'm in, sometimes I think when I'm actually working in the field and stuff, you know, I think, well, what if I get confronted and someone could get their hands on my stuff? Or if my car
mm-hmm.
gets broken into and somebody gets my stuff, I don't want them to be able to see my personal stuff. So there's different ways to look at that. But I don't think that you necessarily need to isolate access to your computer and your communication devices from your partner.
Right.
I think that's something that partners can make on their own, that kind of a decision. I don't think that on itself is a bad thing, and I don't think that it's indicative of something's wrong, but I think that when things are wrong, that's always a component, right? So in other words, when somebody's up to no good, that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
is always there. But that on its own, just like when we look at investigative process with these situations, I hear all the different scenarios that my clients want to tell me about. And I say, well, it's like a puzzle or a picture. You put it all together, it paints a pretty clear picture. I mean, this doesn't look good. And here's why. Bing, 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 bing. If you take out any one of those things on its own, maybe that's explainable and that's on its own is not that. But when you add in all this other crap, and especially
mm-hmm.
history, where there's a history of something that has happened, here we go again kind of a thing. Yeah, I mean, there's very little room left for anything to be legitimate at that point. So, yeah, I think that it's better if you have transparency in those things. But some people, just from where they come from in their own experience in life, like to have some personal privacy. And I give people that pass. But I think that
mm-hmm.
if you've got someone who's really into that, and they're in their secretive, or there's other examples of things that aren't okay, yeah, there's probably a problem there. You've got to be able to take a consensus of all of the factors and make your decision.
Right.
But
part of a pattern.
What it comes down to, when you've got a liar who's very
mm-hmm.
smooth at lying and BSing you, that's hard to work with. So the only thing you do is now you've got to check on them. And I always have to tell people, it's, you know, we cannot get text messages. I can't get emails. I cannot eavesdrop and listen to phone conversations. there's a lot of things I can't do, and we can no longer get phone records, as a private investigator for a client, and we can no longer get bank statements. That's a big no-no. You can't run credit and check all the credit card statements and the exact history of all the transactions. That's not the thing that private investigators can do. And those are all things that would give you some great information, but those aren't available. Now, a spouse sometimes has access to credit card statements and things or phone statements, because they're in the same marriage and they have legal access to those things until they're legally separated, then that goes away. But it comes down to physical surveillance. I mean, if someone's doing these things, then they can be caught doing these things, and they have to see each other. If someone's engaging in an affair, they're going to meet and they're going to go to someplace, whether it's the car in a parking lot or a hotel or an apartment or a crash pad or a restaurant. Those are all things that can be identified and documented through a surveillance. And sometimes that's what you have to do, but never tell the person you're going to do that. That would be felony stupid.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're listening to this broadcast, you'll see on there, Mike's company, LinkedIn, in color. As soon as you click into that, you're going to get Mike's website. And on his website, there's some really excellent information. There's blogs on there, telling you things that you should do, shouldn't do. And contact information for Mike, how to get in touch with him. And some really good stories to read on there. And you can read all about the services that he has. And Mike's always been overly accommodating to all of our women who have contacted him for support and for help. And when you click into his link, you'll see linked investigations and the phone numbers. And Mike can't come to Philadelphia, I guess, to see me. But, you do out-of-town services, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Philadelphia, PA. But anyway, Mike goes all over. But also he has contacts all over. So even if he can't be in a certain part of the country or the world, he has other contacts that he works with that can be there. So it's not just a matter that you have to live in the California area. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep. I just ran down a good firm in Geneva for one of our subjects over there who's been involving himself in my client's life over here. So now we're going to check him out over there. But, yeah, if I don't have – because I've kind of pared back on actually – having people that work with me on a regular basis that are spread out all over, that's never a really strong, good thing to do. But I'm happy to, if I'm not doing it myself, I'm happy to help research people in their area and help connect them. But, I'm always very concerned that if I don't have immediate control over the work product, I'm not real happy about that. So I don't mind helping someone find someone if I can't do it. But we can, like you said, we go all over the place. But sometimes that's not practical, and it's not, it's not in the budget,
if you will.
As far as
the forensic report, you can do that from anywhere, right?
Yeah, all of that. It doesn't matter where I'm located. It's always a national search, so I don't need to be anywhere. That all can happen.
Right,
it's a national U.S. search, yeah. And so there's the physical stuff we do, and then there's the database research that's done. And so the database stuff, it doesn't matter if you get somebody in Maine or in Alaska or wherever they are, as long as they know what they're doing and they avail themselves of good tools. But, yeah, the physical stuff, that's a different story.
All right. So once again, Mike, I'm sorry. This program always goes so fast when you're on here and always leads to so many different things to talk about. But I greatly appreciate you coming, and I'm hoping maybe you'll do it again one more time this year in the next 6 months or so to cover some areas that we never even got to tonight. And you're always such a popular guest.
Yeah, there's a lot.
On the show.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate
it. There's a lot.
I'd
be happy to.
It's a pleasure. You're like the best guy I know. So I just want to thank you so much, and thank you for helping our women all the time. And ladies, once again, Mike at LinkedIn Investigations, just click into that link, and you'll get his website, and he'll be happy to talk to you. So to all our listeners, have a good week. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Mike, I hope you're staying safe. Is it easier to be a PI wearing a mask?
Yeah, I was actually going to take a picture like that because it actually makes us look less obvious, right? Now I can actually wear a mask
and
I don't stand out.
Yeah, that's great. You can use that as your profile picture. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful night. Mike, I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's good
to
talk to you again, and good luck to you all. All right, thanks.
All right, bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.